We're doing Jewish history. We're up to the year 2218. And we had learned how the tribes found their wives. We're left with Benjamin. So Yaakov sends to their second cousin, the Terach, remember? Okay, Terach, Avram's father, had a son named Tzova, who had a son named Aram, who had a daughter named Machlat. And so Machlat was going to be the girl that Binyamin would marry. And so she was imported, she was brought back to Israel. And Binyamin was 10 years old when he married Machlat. And if you do the math in the Torah, it's fairly obvious that Binyamin was very young when he got married, because he already has 10 kids when he goes down to Egypt. And the whole story of Yosef's sale, and then until they come down to Egypt, that's all about 21 years. Now, Benjamin was a child when it all happened. So you do the math, it has to be. So
is Aram like one of the sworn enemies of the Jewish people?
I don't know. I don't think that's the same Aram. So she gives birth to Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Geran, Naaman. And then Binyamin takes a second wife, a granddaughter of Avram from Hagar. The child, the girl's name is Arvat, the daughter of Zimran, who was the son of Avram. At this point, Binyamin is 18 years old. And he has a few more children, Achi, Rosh, Mupim, Chupim, and Ard. Now, Yehuda, we're up to the year 2226. He goes to the family of Shem, and he takes Shem's granddaughter, Tamar, the daughter of Elam, who was the son of Shem, and he marries her. Now, this is a huge discussion. Was Tamar really the daughter of Shem, the granddaughter of Shem? Big discussion. How does all this work out? It's a lot to discuss. I don't think we should go into all that. He goes into a big discussion of Gilgulim. So we decided we're skipping all of that. Remember, Yehuda initially took Tamar for his son, Er, right? His firstborn son, Er, marries the granddaughter of the priest, Shem, and Er spills his seed. He doesn't allow his wife to get pregnant, and so God has him drop dead. Yehuda tells his second son, Onan, come do the mitzvah of Yibum, marry your brother's widow. He died without children. Onan does exactly the same thing. So Yehuda's concerned, what's going on here? So he tells Tamar, wait a little bit, because Shela, my little son, he's still very little, let's wait. Now, a year later, Yehuda's wife, Eilat, she passes away, and Yehuda travels to shear his sheep, and Tamar decides, hey, he's playing a game with me, I'll play a game with him, I'm not letting him get away with this, and Yehuda doesn't recognize her, and the rest of the story is history. Tamar's pregnant. We know Tamar had twins. The first one she calls Peretz. The second one she calls Zarach. Yehuda is 33 years old. And then he has, 8 years later, he has grandchildren. And again, if you look at the verses, you see that you have three generations going down to Egypt. Three generations in 21 years. So you have to say that they were able to have children at a very young age. The Talmud says in Tractate Sanhedrin, but if you look at the verses, if you just count the years from when Yehuda gets married to when they go down to Egypt, and already you have three generations, you have to say that they had children at a young age. So when Peretz was 8 years old, so he had a child named Chetzron, and then next year he had a child named Chamul.
How young were
they? 8 years old. When they were 8 years old, they were already of marriageable age and had children. Yes.
You heard somewhere that it wasn't so much that they were young, but that the gestation period was much shorter than 9 months.
I don't know.
Okay.
I hear. I don't know.
But how do we know it was only eight?
Because in order to have three generations born in 21 years, Yehuda manages to have Er, Onan, Shelah in 21 years, and Er becomes of marriageable age and dies, and Onan comes of marriageable age and dies, and then Shelah comes of marriageable age, and then Yehuda goes with Tamar. And then, 7 months later, let's say she has preemies, Peretz, and Zarah, and they have children who descend to Egypt. Now, all this happens in 21 years. In 21 years, Yehuda has three children that reach marriageable age, another two children that reach marriageable age, get married, and have another generation. So in 21 years, all of this happens, there's no other way, unless they all got married at a young age.
Where does 21 years come from?
You'll look at the math, you'll see. It says, how old was Yosef when he was sold? 17 years old. How old was Yosef when he stood before Paro? 30. So that's 13 years. It says there were 7 years of blessing, so that's 20. And then it says it's only been 2 years of famine, Yosef tells the brothers when he rejoins them. So that's 22 years, right?
I guess I could work anyways if Rivka was only 3.
Okay, but I'm just saying, you see that, I just did the math for you. Okay, so that's what it says. Vayhi beitahi. At that time, Vayerd Yehuda meitacham. Yehuda descended from his brothers. The pasuk says it. Okay. No. Yeah, that's when he first marries his first wife. The whole story starts then.
I know there's a story like in the Nach here, like when they came out of the way, but in the other, you know, this whole thing that's not always chronological, but I know that.
What's up there last night?
About December. I can't remember if I was like a fan here, but I'm going to talk about like, based off this conversation. No, maybe he would have descended from the thing, like, in devastation for what just happened.
But that's fine.
I'm a story, like, this is what happened at one point before, too, so, you know?
Doesn't seem that way. It says Vahi Beitahi. Doesn't get clearer than that. So at this point, the Sara Mashkim, Pharaoh's butler gives him wine, and they find a lot of flies in the wine. And the baker brings him bread, and they find dirt in the bread. So Pharaoh gets upset. He says, punish them, throw them into the dungeon. A year later, they have their dreams, and they tell Yosef their dreams. And Yosef tells them an interpretation of their dreams, and we know his interpretation came true. The queen has her first son, and Paro makes a feast in honor of his first son. He makes a feast for 8 days. They have the bands playing, and everything's hunky-dory. He invites everyone to the feast, and the butler doesn't make any mention of Yosef. He has ample opportunity, and he leaves Yosef in the pit. And 2 more years Yosef will spend in the pit until the completion of 12 years in jail. And Esav at this point hears that Yitzchak is on the verge of dying. So he comes with his children from Edom to Yitzchak. And Yaakov takes his children to Yitzchak. And Yaakov comes and he's still at in a state of mourning over Yosef. Yitzchak tells Yaakov, bring me your children, I want to bless them. And Yitzchak places his hand on each of the 11 children. He blesses them, he hugs them, he kisses them. And then he blesses Esav's kids and wishes them that people should always be scared of them, their enemies should always be fearful of them. And he tells Yaakov, Hashem told me that he will give this land to my descendants. Now, son, teach your children and grandchildren, teach your descendants to be God-fearing people. And with his final message, he passes away. Yitzchak passes away in Hebron, the year is 2228. Yaakov is 120 years old when he buries his father. Yaakov and Esav weep and when they see Yitzchak passed away, and they carry him to Maris HaMachpelah. The kings of Canaan accompany him. They come to bury Yitzchak and they show him great honor. The descendants, the grandchildren, Yaakov and Esav's children, are walking barefoot as they lead the casket, they lead Yitzchak's body to be buried. And when they reach Kiryat Arba, they bury him in the Maris HaMachpelah, that's in Kiryat Arba in Hebron. And they give a great eulogy. Everyone gets to hear what a great person he was. And then Esav tells Yaakov, let's divide everything into two. Our dad left us all kinds of things. Let's divide everything into two. And I want to choose. So Yaakov says, fine. And what Yaakov does is he takes everything that Yitzchak amassed, all his wealth, his cattle, his gold and silver and precious stones. He takes all the wealth and divides it in two and tells Esav, you choose. And then Yaakov tells Esav, look, Hashem, the God of our fathers, said to our fathers that he will give their descendants this land. I'm willing to let you pick. Here you have everything, the whole wealth that Dad left us, and here's the land. Now you choose, what do you want? So Yishmael's, Esav standing there, and their cousin, Nevayot, the son of Yishmael, was standing there too. So Esav goes over to their cousin and says, hey cousin, what do you recommend I do? So Nevayot tells him, why is Yaakov telling you this? Look around. How many kings do you see here in Canaan? They're all sitting comfy. Yaakov says he wants to have the land as an inheritance. I'll tell you what to do. Tell Yaakov, you can have the land. Give me the money. The money's here. The land isn't yours. Look at all the kings here. No one's given you this land. What do you need promises for? You could have the money. So Esav tells Yaakov, fine, I want all the wealth. You could have all the money. So you could have all the land, right? So that's what Esav does. And Yaakov writes a contract with him, and they bring witnesses, and they write down the land of Canaan, the land of the Chiti, Chivi, Yevusi, Amori, Prazi, all seven Canaanite kings from the Nile to the Euphrates, all the city of Hebron, the cave, Maris HaMachpelah, all of that I get as an inheritance for my children. And you get all the wealth, and they write it, and they seal it in an earthenware vessel so it should last for years to come. And Yaakov gives it to his children. And Esav collects all the wealth of Yitzchak, and he goes to his territory in Seir, and he doesn't come back to Israel. From that day onward, he sticks to his end of the deal. And at that point, we start having the famine. There's a famine in the land after Yitzchak dies. Paro has a dream, and he's standing by the Nile. The Nile has turned black, and he sees the seven stalks, the seven cows, and the sorcerers can't interpret his dream. So Paro makes a law. He has them announce that anyone who knows how to interpret dreams that doesn't come today before the king will be killed. And whoever can interpret the dream will get whatever he asks for. So now all the sorcerers, they get such a promise. You can get whatever you want if you interpret the dream. They all start coming in lines and mass to interpret the dream. But none of them get it right because he knew they were wrong. And this is where we'll pick up. Is that your next week?